All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Hope you guys are okay. I hope you've been enjoying the episodes recently. Last three have all been really good in-depth analysis episodes with writers and people who are really into Oasis. So we had Will Buxton, the Formula One broadcaster, talking about Oasis' best driving songs with loads of passion and knowledge. So definitely check that out. We had Richard Bowes, who wrote the book on Oasis, literally. Some might say, talking with me about all the Oasis collaborations, all the Paul Weller stuff and the dance stuff all the way up to 2009. So that was really, really good. And we also had the most recent one was with another author, Tom Boniface Webb, who wrote I Was Britpopped and also has another book coming up, Modern Music Masters on Oasis. And we talked through Oasis in the charts, and that was a really good discussion. So make sure you're checking those out. But here at the Oasis podcast, it's not just about analysis. We also want to hear from the people that were there and involved in it and actually on stage with them in some cases. And today I'm really excited to be joined by Matt Dayton. Matt is a guitar player and singer and an all-round bit of a British rock and roll legend from having been in numerous bands over the years, as we get into in the interview, but Mother Earth on the Acid Jazz label, Paul Weller's band in that sort of heavy soul period up to about 99. And a band we've talked on here before, the episode I did with Steve White, Family Silver. The Family Silver, really, really good band. Fantastic band. Steve White, Damon Minchella and Matt Dayton. So all great players formerly of Paul Weller's band, when Paul Weller's band was absolutely flying. So really good interview today. We do pick up quite a lot on the key thing about Matt in terms of the Oasis world, which is that he actually played with Oasis, one of only a handful of people that aren't from the actual band to have been on stage with them and played with them properly. He filled in for Noel Gallagher on the Standing on the Shoulders of Giants tour. So some really great stories about that. Make sure you're checking Matt out online at Matt Dayton. And I hope you really enjoyed the episode. News-wise, the main thing that's happened is we were thinking it might happen, and with a month to go to the 2nd of October, it has been announced that the 25th anniversary version of What's the Story, Morning Glory is going to be released, and in keeping with what they did with Definitely Maybe last year, it is a special edition vinyl, no new extra tracks, nothing like that. I think there's like a lyric sheet of Wonderwall. There's a picture disc, there's a few different options, but it's just like collector's vinyl. So, yeah, as you know, if you listen to this, I'm not a collector of vinyl myself. I'm not really bothered at all about getting hold of that. I would much rather have, you know, some unreleased versions, some outtakes, some, you know, why not give us Liam singing Step Out? We know that. We know that's out there. Why not give us alternate versions of Wonderwall or all these other amazing songs that we, I'm sure, exist in the archives, and they're just not giving them to us. Or give us an album of live versions, you know? But, you know, there's so much stuff they could do. But what do we get? A vinyl. Well, it's good for you guys that like vinyl, but for me personally, as you know, I would much rather like the Beatles' sort of 50th anniversaries that have been coming out with all this extra stuff. That's what we want. We want the extra stuff. But anyway, it's not going to happen. So there we go. You'll just have to be trawling YouTube and forums like I do. But anyway, we've got loads of episodes coming up about Morning Glory to celebrate the 25th anniversary. But for now, let's cross over to myself with the brilliant Matt Dayton. Jess's all alone and crying.
Nobody really cares. No.
All right, welcome to the Oasis podcast, Matt Dayton. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Yeah. Are you really?
On a spiritual level, I think I'm doing all right. I don't know.
But that's all right. What was...
I guess I'm doing good, and just hope people don't ask me.
Exactly.
In detail as to how.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I've got an answer for that.
I know. Well,
I'm doing really terribly at the moment, so...
I was going to say, we're going to spend a lot of time today talking about like when we weren't shut away and we could actually go and play live music to people and stuff. So, you know, it's been a tough time. I know obviously we talked to a lot of musicians on here, but what did you have planned for 2020? Let's talk about that.
Nothing really. Nothing in a scheduled sort of way. No, it's all lies. I was doing Mother Earth.
Right.
And we sort of kind of did it in a way. We did it in February, which was really good. And then we actually, I think it was like 3 days before they shut London, if you like. Me and Ernie and Nick and Crispin, Celine was not too well, so she was a bit, sort of didn't want to come down, which was really, could have sort of health thing goes, but really needed a kind of there as well. But we cut an album's worth of stuff in a couple of days, just had a load of stuff ready. So that was planned, but then there's this documentary that Kevin Brown has been making over the last 5 years, so that's he got everything ready, so that, I think it's coming out this year. I can't think it's, but it's just sort of been proud to stay in the country. Up in the hills and just I realise how far I don't travel actually. That's what I've found from it. It's how I mean, it's not making light of it, but this sort of the self-isolation thing, I've probably been doing that for a long while, without knowing.
Right.
So when it happened, it was sort of not much of a, as a musician, not much of a change in lifestyle, but there have been gigs, there was supposed to, as with all sort of bands and that, there was supposed to be gigs coming up, and there was a real nice one abroad, and that's all been postponed. I think there's supposed to be one next month in Brighton that's been, well, I haven't even heard back, and I'm assuming that's not going to happen. A friend of mine did a gig the other night, and he did a distanced sort of thing, but that you've got to play really quiet, so until I can play the volume, it'd be short-changing people, really, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've gone off trail from your question there, but
it's
your own fault for ringing us.
Exactly. No, it's a tough one, but no,
I clearly need to get out more because my answers are way too long. That's always a sign that,
Well, it kind of helps if people talk on a podcast, though. No, it's all good, man. It's all good.
Yeah.
So whereabouts were you, you said you're out in the countryside. Whereabouts are you?
We're up in sort of northern sort of Wales.
Oh, nice.
I'm trying to make it sound like it's soulful, like northern Wales.
Like northern soul.
No, we're up in North Wales.
So, yeah. And was that through your missus? Because she's Welsh.
Yeah, Claire, she's proper Welsh. To the point of she'll see, a lot of all the road signs around here are written in Welsh by English people. So I might as well write them because they're all pretty. There was one sign that actually translated to "I'm back." This is true. It was a metal sign, earthwork sign that actually translated into "Sorry, I'm out of the office at the moment. I'll be back on Monday." That's true. That was around here.
That's classic.
Yeah, Claire's as her first language is Welsh, and she does a band called Pop and Brent, which is on and off, and that's completely Welsh. I sort of chip in with a bit of guitar.
Yeah.
But that's sort of an ongoing thing. It feels a bit like Christmas Day every day, not in the way of celebrating, but the quietness.
Got you. Yeah.
And in fact, Claire said to me, she's like the 1970s around here. That's where we live, is where she used to live as where she grew up. So she sort of knows the area, and she said it's very, very, very much like 1970s, less cars.
Yeah.
Less planes, you know. So a bit more nature suddenly appears. We're meant to sort of get out. We were never really in London, but we were meant to get out of London a long time ago. So we've been out here for about over 10 years now, I think.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's kind of nice going back down into London for me. I sort of, you know, it's where the studios can be. Yeah, there's a few people I know that are just like, you know, they're stuck. There's not really much space to go out to, so.
Yeah.
But, it's still kind of strange, like the road going into town or something. It's kind of notice it a little bit, I suppose. But, definitely.
You know, did you grow up in London, Matt?
Years was Tottenham.
Go ahead.
And then we moved to Essex, so just down the road. I sort of grew up around Essex way, and then they put that street on the TV and made a show out of it, and so we moved. The only way is,
God, yeah.
Mediocrity. So, I don't know, it's odd seeing the high street and then filming it. So there's nothing in this high street. Why are you filming it? Oh, I see.
Wow. You've actually seen them wandering around and filming that show, have you?
Yeah, there's some of the kind of, I don't know what they are, wine bar places that were certainly featuring it. Not like I went to, I don't really drink, but they've used a good lens on that building to make it look appealing. It's just odd. But I don't know, Wales and the countryside in general has always been a sanctuary anyway, so.
Yeah.
You know.
Fair play, mate. Fair play.
Well,
I was going to say thank you. Thank you very much for taking the time. It's been great, and it's such a great, you know, opportunity to talk to someone that has played guitar on stage with Oasis, and there's not very many of them. I think it's pretty much you, Noel, Bonehead and Gem, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's a nice experience. It's probably about, in the history of the band, I was in it for 4 minutes on the scale of things. But no, it was it was a very, very nice experience. It was a very dark time as well, I think, for the group.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a dark time for me. So it was a lot of that, I think, come out on stage. This was sort of, I think Gas Panic was the one that was you could get quite heavy in.
Yeah.
But overall, yeah. This, yeah, I suppose there's only been four guitarists. So I'm sort of, you know, I've been, I don't know if I've been in Oasis or sort of walked past them really. With buying their equipment and sort of, it feels like I walked through the group and then they come out the other end.
You're like one of those. You're like a substitute in cricket. You're like a fielding substitute in cricket. You were like drafted in and then like, and then out again.
Sort of passed by, you know.
Yeah.
It was in a loud sort of way.
Yeah, very loud.
It was an opportunity that I kind of actually didn't jump at. To be honest, and that's not a slight on Oasis at all. I just wasn't expecting it. So, for some reason, I sort of said to not the manager, I can't think of the bloke's name, but it's someone from Ignition, you know, said something about we're going to be playing next week, I think it was, and whatever. And I think there was an offer, and I said, oh, I don't know. I said, you probably best get someone else to do it. I was a bit cocky about it, really. I like, completely with no backup at all to back anything up.
Although, I suppose, at this point...
Certain requirements. I said, have a think, give us a ring back. I put the phone down and thought, might have been a bit daft. They rang back again. I don't think I was very well, so just, you know, they rang back anyway.
Well, thank God they rang back.
Yeah, it's good. It was nice, you know. But I had this sort of gig, you know, it's minuscule in comparison to the places I was about to play, but. I had this show out to honour anyway, so I got flown from there to Switzerland. That was it. I got phoned on the, I can't remember what day it was, but got phoned sometime during the week, and I think I was out the following Tuesday or something like this, within a week I think of the phone call, you know.
That is crazy. But you.
It is something, and it's, you know, it's absolutely brilliant. I don't think there's one dull moment in it at all.
No.
How could there be, really? I don't know, you know.
But
I didn't really know this. It's a bit daft, but I didn't really know. I didn't know the album tracks particularly well. Just didn't have their albums. So, you know, I just knew the records because they were everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
So I knew the singles, but I've got the disc upstairs somewhere. It's just got them, what they'd written down for me to learn, like Shakermaker and stuff.
So what did they do? Did they make you like a compilation of like their live, what, because obviously they do it slightly different live to how they did it on record. So what, had they recorded like a recent live show and sent that to you?
No, it's out in the barn at the moment. There's a load of CDs and I came across it the other day and thought I should probably bring it in, but it's only a CD. It's just got, I don't know who's written on it. It's just got the studio tracks. And stuff from Stand on the Shoulder of Giants or Shoulders of Giants. Or, yeah, it just had those tracks on it. But I remember seeing Go Let It Out on TV. I remember seeing the video with the bus.
Yeah.
And thinking, oh, that's good. They've got really nice Rick and Beck bass in it.
Yeah.
I've forgotten his name now. This is getting worse. Bass player of Stone Roses.
Manny.
Yeah, thanks. God. It's only four letters. My God.
No illusion. Try to click with what you got. Taste every potion. You Cause if you like yourself a lot, go let it out. Go let it in. And go let it out. Life is precocious in the most peculiar way.
Literally, the CD arrived, and then I had to go to Dublin to do this gig and do my own sort of bits. And then I listened to the CD on the plane over to Switzerland, in, is it Basel?
Yeah.
Is it pronounced Basel?
Basel, yeah, I think.
Basel, I think, is it?
Oh, Basel, yeah.
And then I met up with them there, and, I sort of literally learned it. Gem sort of kind of did a lot of work with us on the tour bus,
right,
because essentially I was then playing Gem's parts. He was showing me what he was doing, and because they'd done I think it's some supports with the Black Crowes, and I was like really into the Black Crowes, and particularly like Danny Kirwan era kind of Fleetwood Mac, Peter Green and Danny Kirwan. And it turned out that when I joined the bus, Noel was just, all he'd been playing was Black Crowes, Three Snakes and One Charm, and a lot of Blue Horizon, Fleetwood Mac. So I think that sort of, although that wasn't, obviously songs were written by then, a lot of them were these open tuning ones, like I think Who Feels Love is a, it might be in G, open tuning sort of kind of thing. You know, where you tune the guitar to a chord,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Like Joni Mitchell kind of thing. So he was showing me, you know, they weren't regular chords, some of them, which was kind of really exciting to learn.
Mm.
While at the same time Glenn doing that, he was also trying to learn what Noel was doing.
Yeah.
He did a really good job, Glenn. I don't think he's ever been really, you know, I thanked him for it, but he's sort of never been noted as he did a lot of work for it, you know. But I mean, it was without Gem's help, I'd have been quite in the dark. I'd have sort of sussed it in my own way. But there were he's in the group at that point. I think they'd only just joined.
Less than a year.
He was, had more of an inside, you know, knowledge of just little details on certain songs I wouldn't have got right. And a group that big at the time, you know, it's, people would, they know if you've hit the wrong chord or it's not quite right. They might not know why, but they'll feel it. So he was really good with that. He was very patient. I mean, he's just a nice bloke anyway. I've seen him for a long, long while, but they were just, all of them were just like really, really welcoming. And they said, "What's your favourite guitarist?" I said, "Danny Kirwan." I said, "That's why I got the gold top with the P90s on." They went, "Ah, that's who we're listening to now." And, you know, I said, "I like the Black Crowes." And come with us.
You're welcome. Yeah.
So, but it's so there's quite a bit of learning to do from that CD. Was just really, I think what we saw. I think the gig was cancelled in Switzerland, or they're hanging around there, and then we went to Milan to rehearse. That was it. The next couple of days, I think, we was in rehearsal in Milan.
Yeah, so the first one you did them was Fila Forum in Milan, yeah.
Ah, yeah.
And 30th of May. And so at that point, obviously, they dropped stuff like Don't Look Back in Anger, because, you know, you'd need Noel to sing that.
Yeah.
But was there ever any discussion of you doing some vocals with them? Because obviously you're a hell of a singer, so, you know, you could have very comfortably stepped in and done some of Noel's parts, I would have thought. But I don't think you did.
I could have, but I think... I think because it's such a sort of famous group, any kind of good singer... you know, would have it's like just plugging in the Les Paul and sort of learning the chords. You know, it's the human voice, isn't it? And I think it would just be what it sounded too much like a tribute band if I was singing Don't Look Back in Anger.
Yeah.
I could have sung it, but I'd have shortchanged the audience, you know, I think it wouldn't have been right. So it's quite a tasteful, a kind of a real thoughtful kind of move away from anything that would people would have, you know, reason to throw things at the band. They did anyway, which is sort of, it seemed quite amusing at the time. I kind of was in an interview ages ago, years ago, about it, and saying it's quite enjoyable, but ultimately it's kind of, you know, when you're getting rocks thrown in, it's a little bit dangerous. Even Acquiesce was, I thought it was really cool. They left his vocal part off, so just Liam sung the main verses, if you like, and then just did sort of the chords for it, which sounded even more powerful to me.
Yeah.
Not knocking Noel's vocals, it just had this kind of, just like an interesting version.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know how to wake up, please I sleep inside. I only want to see the... Dickhead, I'll break your fucking ass, your family's ass, and your mother's fucking ass. Pack it in.
Well,
you can hear like the power of what the music was doing underneath. I mean, this does sound daft, but I kind of got why people like Oasis. It sounds patronised, but I understood. I kind of got it, I got the thing, but it took me to actually being on stage playing it to get it, which is it's a bit of a long-winded way to kind of get into a band, actually being it. You know, oh, I see. I could see why these chord words in the stadium. I was like, yeah, this is stadium stuff, you know, just a straight A, a straight D chord and a G. In all its glory, just going across, you know, a football pitch makes absolute sort of rock and roll sense, really. I kind of went, I'm sort of grinning, thinking, I see. This is what he had planned when he played at the Fleece and Firkin.
Yeah. So all that time you've been writing these sevenths and these jazz chords and doing these elaborate middle eights, you should have just been doing ADG, mate.
Well, I started off doing that and then got bored. and then wanted to see how far my fingers sort of could be apart from each other on a guitar, on a fretboard. But it's bold stuff. I mean, if, you know, I think I sort of kind of settled down more playing like regular chords, if you like. Even like my next album's got a song that's very, very regular. It's got A's and A's in it. It's disgusting. It's just normal. But it works. But it's a good, you know, all these things sort of rub off, I think. And it rubbed off of my hearing because I can't hear properly anymore. So.
Oh, wow. And do you blame that on the Oasis shows?
Well, I had a hearing test and it was oddly Mother Earth, and between Mother Earth and Paul Weller is where I lost my hearing. And Oasis were quieter. I know it's not about volume, it's just about it's about the power of what a song can do, even on a, you know, on an acoustic guitar, it can knock your head off.
Yeah.
So but volume, just volume wise, I know working with Paul was like, God, it was so loud. I went, no, it was fucking, he said, oh my God, it's just so loud. I said, yeah, but it was good. He said, oh, it's fucking brilliant, but it's just, you know, really full tilt on stage. So when I did the Oasis thing, it was actually a bit quieter, and then as a result, they got, I sort of was that point playing quite loudly.
Yeah.
So although I had a year off doing acoustic stuff, so but when I must have overcompensated by having a year off doing acoustic stuff, and then went, ah, there's Paul's stadiums, okay. Off we go.
So
here's to tinnitus, you know.
So how does it compare, like, you know, being on stage with Weller? Obviously, Weller was doing absolutely massive shows around that time as well. So like, yeah. When you were saying about getting the call, it's not like if it had been someone like Chris Helm, you know, from the, you know, he was busking and then John Squire picks him up and gets him to join the Seahorses. You know, it's not like that. It's not like you were plucked from obscurity. You had been a very successful band. And then also, you know, bloody Weller's main man out playing all these massive, massive shows. But how did that compare, really, between the two?
How's it compare, what, Oasis and Weller?
Yeah, just the different, like, the dynamic of the group as well, and then, like, physically being on stage. I suppose what I'm thinking is that with Noel, he was, like, the de facto leader, whereas then when Noel's gone, kind of...
I know, Paul was sort of, like, I mean... I never sort of had a boss, I suppose. I mean, it's sad about having bosses, but as far as leading goes, you know, I was just serving the song as best as I could, and they happened to be really good songs, because as either Paul Weller's tunes, and then Noel's ones had their own sort of strengths to them, their own sort of power, if you like. It's both totally different. I don't know. I mean, I've sort of got to bear in mind with Weller, this was like a there was no crisis in the Weller thing. That was like, right. You know, it's all, it was no problems. I had walked out. I hadn't joined it because someone had left. It was, but actually, although Steve Craddock couldn't do it, that got it, because Steve's, you know, Ocean Colour scene were number one, so he couldn't juggle between working with Paul and I think one from the Modern might have been, or one before then,
right?
I don't think, but so I got asked him because Craddock couldn't do both. But I was aware of that anyway. And Paul said, "Steve can't do it. Would you be up for coming along for a bit?" And it just turned into like 4 years or however long it went on, And it came to sort of an abrupt end, which I was kind of, by that point, slightly enhanced by stuff. So I was expecting things to just continue. Because it was actually a really, really good, you know, for me, it's like a really, really good group. Coming from Mother Earth, which is a really good group, I thought it was a great band to be in.
Yeah.
And then go to Weller, which was, some people were like, yeah, but you're a lead singer as well, and now you're doing backing vocals, is that odd? It's like, no. I just love music.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's good stuff, I'll play on it, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes if it's not that good, I'll play on it.
Talk about, you know, great bands and that, like, that Weller lineup at that time with yourself and obviously Steve White, I think is maybe one of the best drummers who are, you know, in the world, and obviously Weller's no slouch, is he? So it's what a band, you know, what a band. And he always brought so much passion every single show, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, what I noticed is coming from a different level of, you know, a lot of people loved Mother Earth, and it was at its time and everything, and that particular lineup, Neil and Bill and Chris, who's sort of the main ingredient in the group, really, was Chris White, another White, really, just sort of, he didn't like funk, he just was into psychedelia and all the rest of it, so it, coming from that and then going into Weller, Mother Earth never rehearsed much other than if we had to. And then well rehearsed, and the rehearsals were just as what's the word? Just as committed as a gig.
Got you.
There was absolutely no difference between a rehearsal and a gig, other than in the rehearsal you could stop mid-song and have a look at it.
Right.
You know, because it was a rehearsal. But the intensity level, I'd get the train from Shepherd's Bush on the way home quite happily exhausted from it. It's just like a beautiful time. So, you know, and he'd go downstairs, go, "Well, Matt, do you want to try this written back out or whatever?" And I think he's trying to give me a guitar at one point, but I didn't want any of them. You know, I sort of went into me Gretchy, so they'd be bringing sort of guitars up, and I said, "Have you got that one from Come to Milton Keynes that's on the front, the Rickenbacker?" He's like, "Yeah, it's downstairs. I'll try that out." See if we can shoehorn that into the set list. You know, but no, they were like really heavyweight rehearsals.
Yeah.
So then going from that to like what you're originally asking about, like, you know, what the band dynamics like and everything. And the thing is, when I came into the Oasis sort of situation, it was on edge. It was on edge because, you know, not the singer and the guitarist is just, well, not the singer, but one of the singers that is you know, just walked out.
Yeah.
I thought they handled it really well, but I mean, Andy Bell picked me up he came along with Dan, I can't remember his name there, he's a really lovely bloke as well, he's gone. One of the minders picked me up at the airport, and Andy Bell looked sort of a little bit quiet, you know, because they'd only just joined, so
yeah.
I was like, "Oh, this is great," you know, airplanes and things and guitars, wonderful. And didn't realise that, you know, their jobs were on the line, but I'd have felt a bit shaken if I'd been asked into a major group. I mean, the bloke that asked me leaves.
Yeah, definitely. You know, absolutely.
You've still got gigs to do. It's like,
yeah.
You know.
Well, I suppose there was a question.
I don't know. Alan White, they didn't know. It's kind of strange, but they didn't know who to get. So Alan White said, "Well, look, Matt's not doing anything. He's just been working with my brother with Paul's band, so he might be about." So they rang us. They're probably no doubt on other people. You know, I could have been, I don't know if I was first choice or 50th choice. I have no idea. I don't want to know either. It's really my ego. I don't think I was first choice, personally.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You're probably first choice above Noel in 1991.
They probably went, "Oh, look, we're going to have to ring him now." Everyone else said no.
No, well, that's...
He hasn't got that fucking moustache.
Well, that was... I was reading some of the old, like, you know, articles from around the time and stuff, and because obviously you had the sort of the big handlebar moustache and this, like, massive, you know, great big sort of Frank Zappa kind of hair, and then you had, like, the real short crop, but it was a...
Well, I got it cut by James Brown, but not the James Brown. That would have been well cool. But, I got it, when I sort of wasn't doing the Weller thing, and I was getting bored with me hair, my moustache was like, "I can't really add this." So I went to the Top of the Road, and it was the old, he'd been there since I'd moved in when I was three, just James Brown, the hairdressers. So I just went over there and said, "I just fancy having a skinhead," and just, you know, it's summer, sort of coming in summertime, like May, June, yeah. And it's literally 2-3 days after I got a phone call, and then people going, "Oh, you've had your hair cut for Oasis." It's like, "Not really. It's just the weather." But, you know, you can't really. I was too busy trying to learn odd chords.
Yeah.
They weren't all straight chords, that was the thing. There's sort of, you know, there's some weird things in Gas Panic that were odd.
Yeah. So, well, it is
odd, you know.
It is one of the the set list had changed a lot. I think if you'd come in the, you know, to replace Bonehead in like 1995, then it probably would have been a lot more straightforward. But yeah, was there a sort of a break discussion, like you were saying earlier about the discussions with Gem? Was there ever a discussion for that you were going to do Noel's parts and Gem would keep his, or was it always like, no, you know, I'll take?
No, James is like, there's no time to think of any of it. I think that's what it was. It looked, when I turned up a bit, got off the plane, they still looked in shock to me. And maybe whether they were or not, I don't know, but there was a quietness. There might have been, because it was like, oh, fucking hell, that's to get him in. Or, I don't know. the whole backstory to this I'm fully unaware of, probably best I am. But no, they looked a bit like, oh, a bit winded by it. That was my feeling. But they weren't glum, so far as they were just like, oh, well, we'll make it happen. And,
yeah.
You know, we just went out for something to eat that night and a few drinks or whatever, and then next minute we're on a tour bus going to Milan to rehearse. I thought, this is lovely. So I just went back and stayed at the same hotels I was with Wello, which is sort of quite funny, really.
Oh, cool, okay.
So it's, I don't know, it's just all, you know, just sort of like a bit deja vu.
Yeah. And within the group, had you known, so obviously you knew Steve through the Weller connection, but did you know of the guys? Had you sort of crossed paths with the Mother Earth touring and Weller touring?
No, I mean, Alan would turn up at Paul Weller gigs, you know, because of his brother, and then he'd get on stage. So Alan got on stage at a gig in Brixton, I think the Charlatans were headlining it, and it's to do a Crisis, if I'm right. This is like early on with the Weller thing, and then Noel would be at sort of rehearsals, Weller rehearsals, making the tea. That wasn't why he turned up, obviously, but he just got lumbered with making the tea because we were rehearsing. So someone's got to do it. So I'd seen Noel. Years ago, I didn't say it's to Mother Earth at the time, but we were supposed to support Oasis back in about 1995 on some tour, and I turned it down. And a lot of people go, that's wasn't a good career move. But I couldn't envisage me going on stage with a long moustache when there's people waiting to hear, you know. I can't think of any of their songs now.
Rock and Roll Star.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll Star. And Shaker Maker again.
Yeah.
And, Don't Look Back in Anger and all that sort of, you know. But I just didn't think it would fit. I still don't think it would have fitted.
Right.
But then, basically, in rehearsals with Weller, not rehearsal, recording of Heavy Soul, I went down to Warhol to listen to the album as it was being finished, possibly be on it. Well, I didn't end up on it, I sort of ended up near it. But and then Noel turned up at that studio, and this is an odd thing, I don't think I've told anyone this. Marco was there, and we were just in between a cup of tea and something else, and like, we were recording, I think, a bit of overdubbing. I wasn't doing anything, I was just sort of sitting around taking in the album and stuff. So, and Noel asked me, he said, what do you do? And I thought this might be a bit cliche, I don't know why, but I thought it'd be a bit cliche, so I'm playing guitar in Paul's band. So I said I'm the local artist. I don't know why I said it. It's like sort of Kirby enthusiasm or something. I said I'm just do paintings, and I think I said I do pottery or something. I sort of heard myself saying this. I wasn't like nervous or anything. I just thought it's too cliche to say, oh, I play guitar. You know, it's just too cliche. So I just lied, and Marco's looking at me going, fuck you on. what are you on about? He didn't say anything. So I just, and then in rehearsals, well, a rehearsal sort of, I don't know, about 3-4 months later, Noel's about, he said, I know who you are, because I still had the moustache. He said, you're out of Mother Earth. He said, we used to come and see you when you played the Boardwalk, because I think they rehearsed rehearsing downstairs at the time. So, not that I saw them at the Boardwalk when we played, but they used to come up and watch the band. So, this is the sort of the irony of being asked into Oasis at the time, was I thought, well, I know Alan White and I know Noel. And they said, well, actually, yeah, Noel's not coming.
you have to be Noel.
I knew Gem, though, because I knew Gem from Heavy Stereo. His band supported the Heavy Soul Tour.
Yeah.
So I knew him from then, but I thought it was the other guitarist out of Heavy Stereo that they'd got in. There was this other guitarist, I think he was a singer, but he had another, he's just as good as Gem, really, you know, and I thought they'd asked him. And then when I turned up at the Oasis sort of rehearsals, Andy Bell said, I know Mother Earth. And I said, oh yeah, well, it's, you know, sort of been about for a little bit. He said, I was in Mother Earth. And I said, what? He said, when you left, he said, I joined it for about a month. I wrote a couple of songs.
Really?
That was odd.
You've got to pick up every stitch. You've got to pick up every stitch. You've got to pick up every stitch. Oh.
Yes, 20 years, yeah. Pretty much, yeah. 20 years. What, 20 years in about two, 3 months, yeah.
Yeah, I might have just left by now. I might have been dropped off at Victoria Station and said goodbye to, I can't remember. We might have gone to a Peter Green gig about this time 20 years ago.
Wow.
We did go to the Borderline, all of us. That was quite it was kind of all right, although Peter Green sort of, you know, surprised he was actually playing, to be honest.
Yeah.
His flame had been snuffed out a while ago.
Yeah.
You know, when he was in his early 20s, but...
And wasn't it that you went to that... I think I was reading that you went to a... It might have been that Borderline gig, and Noel was there. But then...
Yeah, we all went.
Yeah. But then, like, then it was... You then had... Was this not in the gap? Because you had all the main ones in a row, and then Noel came back in to do Lansdowne Road... And then you did some more, and then Noel came back in to do the UK shows, and then I think you did two more, and it was in that sort of gap that was, so that must have been a little bit weird. Like, oh, hello.
Yeah, I got asked to do Wembley Stadium, and I thought that'd be good. So obviously, so they said, well, come along just in case. I said, well, I don't want to come along to sort of not like I'm important or anything, but, you know, just, I don't want to come along to antagonise the situation if, you know, I don't know what the dynamics are here, you know, wouldn't it be best if you had got both the rights to songs? That'd be good, ideally, you know. And they just said, well, do you want to come and watch? I said, well, yeah, they weren't sure whether I should be at the side of the stage in case anything happened. Because I got a feeling that they might have done... Was it Dublin? Did they play? Was it Lansdowne Road?
Lansdowne Road, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they did it the week before, but there was this kind of, no one wants to do the UK gig. Yeah, it's fair enough. who would want to turn down, you know, he's not not going to do Wembley Stadium or Lansdowne Road. So I sort of on standby. It's like, I don't know much about football, but it felt like I was in a football team at that point.
Absolutely.
On the sides. I was on the sides, and I suppose it was at Wembley Stadium, so it would be very football-like. But I just ended up watching it. I went there with my brother and mate Adam, and we went and watched it, and then we thought we'd better leave early because there'll be a lot of traffic. But it was good to watch it, but it was a bit surreal, because it's like, well, if that makes sense, I'll be playing with them in 2 days' time abroad again.
Yeah.
It's a nice position to be in. But and then it was, Andy Bell had his birthday party, and it was like a fancy dress thing somewhere, and we went, and I was just chatting to Noel there. I said, "This is odd, isn't it?" And he went, "Yeah, bit weird." I said, "When you think of coming back into it then, and when am I thinking of not doing it?" It's always all a bit odd. I was like, "If you go in there, I won't be in it. But you've written the songs, it's your band." Very strange. Yeah, it was the bit in between. It was an odd one, that. But there wasn't any, any atmosphere or anything like that at the party. There was no, I don't think there'd have been, they're not the sort of people that want to spoil things, so everyone was very jovial.
Yeah.
You know, it was a bit odd, though, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I suppose the fact that it was his choice, wasn't it? It wasn't like someone's getting sacked from a band. You know, I'm sort of thinking of like Sid Barrett getting turfed out and then getting in like Dave Gilmour. You know, then it's sort of a bit different,
yeah,
isn't
right.
it? It was his choice to step away, and obviously it didn't. I think it came from a pretty negative place, because obviously they'd had a big falling out. But and he was
yeah.
like, "Sod it, I'm not going
I
on
the
road
in the
with
room
you."
Where it happened, but I wasn't in the room when it happened. What's the place? We'll get it in a minute. It's in Spain. That's right. It's got La Ramblas. What's it called?
Barcelona.
Thank you. Yeah, I did so well at school. Geography. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They said, this is the room it happened in, and that's where that went, and that's what went flying, was went over there. It was like, oh. It still felt a bit funny being in the room, but because we returned to honour the gig. In fact, that's when Simon Halpern was out with us.
Oh, was
he'd
it?
Come out, and they would talk about the merits of you know, the different mixes in mono of, you know, the Beatles. I said, yeah, you know, White Album's different. It's before they reissued all this stuff, you know.
Okay, so you'd have to actually listen to it.
Floyd's stuff. I remember that was the conversation, was about the White Album.
That's cool.
Which isn't unusual. But me and Andy Bell were playing a lot of, you mentioned Sid Barrett, was playing a lot of stuff like It's No Good Trying on the bus.
It's no good trying to place your hand where I can't see, because I understand that you're different from. Yes, I can tell that you can't be what you pretend, and you're rocking backwards, and you're rocking towards the red and yellow mane of a stallion horse.
I got him into West Country folk and Martin Carthy. That's what I got him into.
Oh, really?
It's very odd, because I was coming from doing this album called You Are the Healer that was completely not Oasis.
Yeah, very folky, yeah.
That's what I was promoting when I was in Dublin, was this You Are the Healer album that's got all folk instruments on it. And part of that, there's a play called Lark Rise to Candleford that had this is digging here, but you know, I might as well tell someone that needs to know this. Let's get it off my chest. A bloke called Brian Prothero, because I was always into this song called Pinball that he did. He's an actor. but he did this 70s song called Pinball. But he also did this sort of West Country accent. I think that's a West Country accent. I could be wrong there. Just this play that my brother got me into called Lark Rise to Candleford.
Yeah.
James.
You're right, mate. So.
I might have to do part two a bit tomorrow, because my daughter is trying to ring me.
Yeah, no, of course not, mate. Don't worry.
Paul Weller just played a track on Joe Wiley, which is really nice.
Oh, wow. No worries.
Right, Jason, thanks for ringing. I'll speak to you tomorrow if that's okay.
Speak to you tomorrow, mate. Brilliant stuff.
Nice one.
Cheers, bye. And we are going to put a pin in it here. So thank you very much. That was part one of Matt Dayton interview. And we're going to come back very shortly with part two, where we dig even further into the time with Oasis and also some of his other stuff from his career as well, with Mother Earth and the other fantastic stuff he's done. So definitely come back on the Oasis podcast next time, when we're going to pick up again with Matt Dayton. But anyway, for now, thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast. And thanks most of all go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly appreciated. Do please follow on the socials at Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, and Oasis Pod on Instagram. Email me with suggestions or comments on the show to oasispod@gmail.com. And do please subscribe and review on iTunes if you can. It's always great when we get those iTunes reviews come in. Anyway, until next time, when we'll pick up again with Matt Dayton, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.